Ready to convene. Do I have to pound the gavel for opening? Okay. For our Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019, regular closed session. Is there anyone here to make public comment?
You need to have her do roll call.
Roll call.
Oh, roll call first. Okay.
Yeah. Director Coleman?
Present.
Director Katz?
Present.
Director Lenny?
Here.
Director Mellon?
Present.
Director McIntosh?
Here.
Director Patterson?
Present.
President Young?
Here. Okay, now public comment. Seeing none, the board will adjourn to conference room 8, 8th floor, for closed session. Do I need to read these items? No.
Items 1, 2, 3, or whatever it is.
Items 1 through 1 and 2, and we will reconvene at 1:15 today for our regular business meeting. Let's begin. Madam Secretary, would you like to call the roll, please?
You want to announce the meeting first?
Oh, I'm sorry. The regular meeting of the East Bay MUD, East Bay Municipal Utility District Board of Directors for Tuesday, January 22nd. There are no announcements from closed session.
Okay.
What?
All right, you announce roll call, it, please. And you ask for roll call.
Okay.
Open the meeting.
Here, I'll do it for you.
Director Coleman?
Well, no, because she didn't resist.
Katz?
Present.
Lenny?
Here.
McIntosh?
Here.
Mellon?
Present.
Patterson?
Present.
President Young?
Here.
Now
I know.
Any cards for public comment?
I know.
No,
actually, that is not
Pledge
what's
of Allegiance.
Next. We have the Pledge of Allegiance next.
That's right.
I am running the meeting, okay? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We actually have a couple items before we go to public comment. The first is to approve 2019 board committee assignments.
Where are they?
In your board packet. In the beginning of your board packet,
like page 5.
Page 5.
In the bill.
Whoa. Yeah.
Page 5.
Yeah, it's right after the board calendar bill.
Move to approve.
Second.
A motion and a second.
Second.
And well, we have a second. Any move by? Lisa, seconded by Director Coleman. Bill, do you need a minute?
I need a minute, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
A few of us actually had all thought that we had a separate memo about it.
I did.
In addition to what was in the packet. Oh. No, it's just in the packet, I think.
Yeah, it's in the packet.
Any discussions, switcheroos, changes?
So we want to just let Director Patterson know that most of your assignments are the same, except for, I believe, one of your committees.
Yeah, you're on planning, chair of finance.
Well, I'm on planning.
I put you on planning, yes. You had a hole that needed to be filled.
Ooh, okay,
And you're on Freeport?
Yeah, I'd see that.
And UMRA?
Well, I prefer legislative, but it's okay.
You're still on ledge, aren't you?
You're still... No, he's not on ledge.
Oh, there he is.
I'm not on ledge. Each other. Okay.
Yeah. Lisa's on ledge.
I had to make hard choices.
Mm. Same thing there. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I think if we're permitted to, if there's still a lot of heartburn over something, that we can actually come back and make changes at a future meeting if need be. Is that right?
Yeah.
we can adjust if we need
rather
to.
Rather than hold it up, move it on
okay.
right now, and then we'll come back.
You got to do some horse trading with somebody, Bill, if you want to change. Okay. Ready for a vote? Mm-hmm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Okay. There are no announcements from closed session. At this time, any members of the public who would like to make comment? I don't have any cards, so if there's anybody else who would like to come forward. Once, twice. Okay. All right. Consent calendar.
I'll move 1 through 11.
I would request that number 11 be pulled.
Okay. Any objection from the maker?
No, that's fine.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Doug seconds. Okay. Motion to approve consent calendar has been for items 1 through 10 has been moved and seconded. Are there any discussion? Okay. Let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Okay. Unanimous. Item 11.
My sole reason for pulling it is because I think it shouldn't be just a consent calendar item, that it should be something we approve by a separate motion. I have no objections with anything that is written there. I just want to acknowledge that the persons who have been willing to be our backups are being noted appropriately.
Yeah, just to clarify for those that are listening or recording, this is the item to approve our standby officers who will serve in the event of our an emergency and determined unavailability due to said emergency.
I agree, Frank. It should be pulled. Thank you. I would hope when I raised this several years ago, it's because I read about the city of San Raimondo in it. It would be nice to let our public information office do a release on this, let people know what we're doing and who they are, just so people have an idea that we are, hopefully we never have to, but we're sort of planning for the worst case scenario to show our commitment.
Yeah, perhaps with a short sentence about their, you know, affiliations and fund. It's quite a distinguished crew when you look at it. So, okay. I don't think anybody seconded this motion yet.
It hasn't been made first yet.
Frank moved it.
Second.
Is that Andy?
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Passes unanimously.
President Young, I did vote for the consent calendar, but I wanted to make a brief comment on the item number 8.
You can't. We already passed it.
Yeah. Just.
John, you are not the chairman of the board. I've just been waiting to say that.
The item looks logical to me, and I have had exposure at various water conferences about what a water market program might look like based on the Los Angeles exploration. But I do think it raises questions about how it would function and what policy issues would be needing to be resolved. So I do want to request that there be some committee process and eventually a full board presentation about what the scope of this MOA and the market program might look like.
So this would be a planning committee item, I'm assuming.
I think we'll probably touch on it first. We're doing a long-term water supply workshop, so we'll touch on it there. And you know, this involves the Bureau and multiple parties, so it's not going to go super fast. So we'll have plenty of time to come and engage with you.
All righty. On to determination and discussion. Item 12, General Manager's Report.
So I just ask that our Manager of Water Supply, David Briggs, come and it's more than Water Supply, Water Operations Department, provide an update. It's been a rainy period since last we met.
Good afternoon, President Young and members of the board. Yeah, our watersheds have fared well in the last week and a half, and that good fortune continued into the weekend, including some unexpected productivity on Sunday night with a storm that really wasn't forecasted to be much that turned out to be pretty significant. So we'll get you the latest numbers and then offer some comments about projecting the supply conditions moving forward through the rest of the year. But first, we'll begin with water production, which, as you've heard before, is generally trending last year's results, give or take. At this point, though, with some cool weather in December and January, we're actually trending 1 or 2 MGD production-wise lower than last year, and I know that's echoed in a similar result that's showing up in our metered use as well. So we're tracking slightly below last year at this point, but we'll see what happens with spring. Okay, on to the good results here. So we had quite some production the last week or so in the upper McKelmy watershed. January at this point is above average. We received 8 inches in the last 2 weeks, and that brings us to beyond average, above average for season to date. That's great to see, and January was very good. This is probably all we're going to see in January. The forecast for the next 7 to 10 days is very dry. You saw the weather outside today. We expect that for the next week. The ridge that's developing right now, some of the extended forecasts are now showing that it might break down in the first week of February, which hopefully it will. And thankfully, some of the federal staff at the National Weather Service are working right now. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this outlook information. Locally, we didn't fare quite as well. We didn't quite reach average for the month of January. And again, we probably won't expect much for the rest of the year, rest of the month. And we're still trying to reach average at this point locally. But the snowpack is and remains the true story. I see some impressive snowpack developing. And that I mentioned Sunday night. That little blip at the end there gave us another 10 inches up there, which was a great little add-on. And we're about 80 inches right now. Snowpack, compare and contrast that with a year ago when we were about 10. So it's a world of difference between last year. We're looking really good up there, well above average. And quantitatively, 144% of average for the depth and roughly similar for water content. Really good figures. We still have about half of the water year to go, so it is early, but things are looking good. Storage-wise, we're about as full as we want to be. We are making flood control releases at the moment. We increased those last week to maintain that flood reservation space upcountry. And looking forward, with this kind of storage we have now and that snowpack and the rest of the water year, we'll have more quantitative numbers for you in that first report in the first board meeting of February. But right now, even under a 90% exceedance, a very dry hydrology from this day forward moving through the end of the year, we'll still be well above 500,000 acre-feet of carryover, probably closer to 600,000, even if starting from today is dry moving forward. And we'll tighten that up as we fine-tune the numbers for next time. But looking real good.
Dave, is that when we'll see that chart that shows that?
Yeah. 90%? Okay. Yeah, we don't have very precise numbers right now, so I'm going to wait one more meeting to show that. But, yeah, that'll be what I'll show next time.
Quick question on the current water supply. When it says McKelmy precipitation, are we talking about snow or just actual rain?
This one here?
Yeah.
It's both. Yeah, okay. So it converts, one of these, so it's a 4-station index. Some of them do get snow and they convert that to water content.
Okay.
Wow. Any other questions?
Lisa can't really talk, but she wanted to know why the snowflakes weren't showing up yet.
Well, I know we were pressed for time, and under that constraint, I had to cut some slides that ended up on the cutting room floor, so
you,
I apologize for that.
You could do another thing like dancing polar bears or docks or anything else too. Doesn't have to. Don't confine yourself to Eileen's. You know.
I'll get creative.
Animation.
Careful what you ask for.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I did notice. Did we actually? I was potentially paddling last weekend on McKelmy and decided against it, but we were getting pretty good inflows into Pardee around 900, 1,000 or
above. Yeah, they're up there right now. They're going to roll off here as now the hydrograph is kind of come and gone. We expect PG&E reservoirs are pretty much empty at this point.
Right, they weren't releasing anything.
So. Yeah, they're going to start coming up, and so you know, absent of that, the flows will be a little lower than anticipated from natural runoff as they fill up.
So has PG&E talked to you with their financial issues about buying the reservoirs up above us?
Not recently. I think it's some of their troubled assets are the ones they're trying to offload, not their better ones.
Well, they need to offload, looks like all of them.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay.
Doesn't hurt to make an offer.
You know, that's not a bad idea.
Well, we have been in communication with PG&E recently, but not since they declared bankruptcy, but recently before that. So this will be a subject of some discussion at the Upper Mokelumne River Water Authority meeting next week.
Okay.
Friday.
On Friday, yeah. Time just goes so fast. I'm sorry. Yeah, on Friday. So that they'll be sharing the latest on that conversation. Board willing, the next subject under the GM report is our 2019 customer opinion survey. And Doug Wallace is going to briefly walk you through where we're headed with this. And then we have questions at your places that Doug will touch on.
President Young, members of the board, this should be painless, I hope, but brief. Unfortunately, it's completely graphics deprived, so I offer you no entertainment value at all.
Oh, yeah, I got two of these.
So we are just on the verge of our biannual taking temperature of the customers in our service area, yeah. And we are just slipping in the right now before the budget cycle begins. Oh, page down. How are we doing this? Page down. Well, I've got a really good title slide for you.
With snowflakes?
Snowflakes.
Just one?
First staff person who comes with snowflakes gets a cookie.
Exactly, right.
Well, we can't do snowflakes down here because that has other connotations.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so this is our survey. I think you're quite familiar with it. You should have the questionnaire. I certainly hope you have the questionnaire today. It's with you. It has 65 questions, and I do want to go through a few parts of it with you. Obviously, our purpose here is to get a better take on our customers. This is the time when we listen to them, even though there's a portion in this questionnaire that I find interesting, where we do a little messaging and see how that influences their perceptions. And hopefully, as a result of the data we gather at the end, this will help focus our messaging, again, particularly as we go into this budget
cycle.
Who did
BART's survey?
Mm-hmm. Pardon me?
Who did the survey for BART that was in the paper this morning? Do you know?
I didn't look.
It was not really good.
It wasn't our firm.
We want to be sure not one of those bias reports.
They're there in full denial. They had nothing to do with it. I will. So in the last survey, of course, we had quite a bit of emphasis on conservation because that's what's where we're really putting a lot of focus. Because of drought recovery and the great customer response on conservation efforts, we're shifting a little bit to focus more on infrastructure upgrades and emergency preparedness. Now, here's the correct arrow. This time we're going to do something a little different. As you all know, how people access information is changing over time. So for the first time, we are adding an email to web survey element to the telephone interview, which, of course, we use landline and cell phone numbers. As in previous years, we've done 1,200 contacts, and it's an 18-minute survey. So when we ask you for feedback on this questionnaire, I'm going to beg you not to add unless you're willing to subtract. And the standard statistical margins of error and confidence level, and again, in multilingual. So there are four sections, in basic sections in the survey. I just want to point out a few parts of it.
Time out for a
yes,
second.
Yes, sir.
When you say multilingual, does that mean that the telephone interviewers will be looking to asking persons whatever language they want to speak?
Yes, they determine. I'm going to let the consultant correct me if I'm wrong here, but they will determine what is the preferred language and obviously if they're speaking something other than Spanish or Chinese, probably is not going to work out. But yes, the subcontractors all have multilingual capacity for these reasons. Okay.
And Doug,
yes.
I thought that something unique you were going to speak about, the integration of the email to web survey?
Yes, I thought I touched on that, but maybe I'm talking too fast.
Just say what it means. You said it, but you
okay,
didn't
so,
really
well,
explain.
Okay, so in addition to, because people aren't using their phones as much, the contractor has proposed that we add a survey, an online survey element here, which they'll combine the data from both that online survey along with data they gather from these phone interviews. So the respondents will see the same questions and respond, and that data will be gathered. Now,
who gets the emails be randomized the same way that you would randomize?
I believe so.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jessica Polsky with EMC Research. Just to quickly address the question, yes, so there will be a random selection of customers from a combination of sources. And so we will use both email to web methodology, so sending an invitation by email to a portion of the randomly selected community.
So it's the randomly selected universe, and they'll get a phone call attempt, an email attempt.
For the most part, we will try to deal separately. So some people are more easily reached over the phone. Some are more easily reached by email. But we do draw one random sample, and we attempt to reach them in one way or another. So yes, to answer your question, it is a random sample using multiple modes to reach them.
Wait, don't go away.
Sure.
So on the email, where are you drawing from? From our customers that are doing bill payment online, or do we sign up all of our customers nowadays with their email address included?
So I think a combination of the two of us can answer your question. We are using a combination of sources for the random sample of the community. We're using publicly available sources, including the voter file, and then we're also using the customer list.
Last week to the consultant, and obviously this is highly privileged and it contains only limited information, but information that helps them randomize the sample.
But it's a larger universe than just our bill-paying customers. It's people that drink water in our service
exactly right.
area. Who we're trying to talk to, right?
But it doesn't state on here whether you or a member of your family works for East Bay Mud to exclude them.
Can you say how that was that excluded in the past?
It's not something that we haven't excluded those people in the past. We certainly can.
As long as it's not the board members.
Right.
I took the survey once.
Did you?
You shouldn't have the survey.
We definitely intended to exclude the board members from the survey. That was already planned. So we can add a question 66. That could be quick.
I was just wondering. I always thought that you did that.
Sure. And another thing we can do, we do, as mentioned, probably don't want to call one of you to take the survey. So we have a very small list of people that can be excluded from the list of survey respondents. And if there's an important list to include from you all, we can make sure to do that.
Thanks. Okay. So just to quickly walk through certain sections of the survey, I just draw your attention to, if you could open to page 2, the beginning, again, sort of overall, as they say, overall impressions, district ratings, and my favorite one in that is starting with question 4 about favorable to unfavorable views of different utility providers, and this time we added your cell phone service provider. And when you see a T, a capital T in parentheses, that is actually a question. There are many of them, questions that we want to retain because that indicate trending data used in a number of previous years. So that trend lines over really since 2004 really help us. Consumer interest and priorities is a very short section starting with question 30 about how they rate the importance of, say, preparing for earthquake, upgrading infrastructure, preparing for droughts, and so forth. Oops, I'm ahead of myself here. Informational messaging, that's the part where I say we inform them a bit, starting with question 35. And these are, again, are all randomized in terms of the order of asking the respondent. And this is where we try to convey some information and then see how that affects their reply. So we spent quite a bit of time working on these. Many of these are original questions that help us focus in more tightly on areas of interest. Again, the data we get back will help focus our messaging and help us understand the more and less effective ways we're reaching our customers with information. And then the final section is just on whether they've had an interaction with East Bay Mud, particularly in terms of customer service, evaluating their satisfaction and then gaining some, gathering some additional demographic data. So I did not specify a deadline for your review, but I'm requesting that you give us any feedback by the 5th of February. That's 2 weeks from now. That'll give us time to finalize it, hand it back to Jessica and her colleagues, and then conduct the survey over the course of a month. And then we'll be able to report back to you no later than May on all this. But the data will help really with our messaging starting as soon as we get the reports back. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have one question. So we don't have, in terms of demographic information, we aren't asking anybody about their income level or household income?
Yes, we already played with that one. The consultant replied, sometimes people are reluctant to provide that information, and we get other data here, particularly education is a pretty good proxy for the income level, and that's shown at the end. So that was a deliberate non-inclusion, and again, sometimes I guess there is enough of a confusion on the part of the respondent not to be able to reply readily. But I got that right, Jessica? Pretty close?
Yeah, it was a topic of some conversation, this morning in our workshop about the fact that we don't, we guess. I mean, I recognize this is an opinion survey. It's not going to give us I think it would be helpful to understand. I mean, maybe we can't get a valid, a valid answer in college or education level is the best that we can do. But I
guess just the reliability of answers in the past when they've attempted this question has been a little sketchy. So that's the reservation. And on a number of questions, I have deferred to them. I think they've answered back readily, and they are the ones with the experience in this kind of work. So we've definitely had a good deal of back and forth and fashion in the questionnaire, but we can take another look at that if you like, and take that as part of the feedback up front.
Have you dropped that question from all surveys that you do now? Because I've still seen it in a lot
of
surveys.
Yeah. So we do at times ask it in certain circumstances when it's an extremely important kind of, I'll call it a crosstab. So if it's very important for us to be able to look at the results based on household income, for example, we can include it. We just have to sort of be cognizant that there are a certain portion of respondents in each income category who will say, I prefer not to respond. And so we won't be able to include data from those. So certainly, again, this also is this is a long survey. And so we were trying to make somewhat prudent choices about what to include and what not to include. So, education level nowadays is extremely important to include to make sure we're getting a relatively representative sample. So that's one that we recommend including when possible. So we were sort of making the tough choices between demographic questions.
I'd really like to see us include income.
I would, too.
I agree.
Right. Sounds like we'll include it.
I mean, we're struggling with it. We're trying to. It's something we're really spending a lot of time trying to figure out. Is like, how are we reaching our most economically insecure customers? And I don't know that education necessarily. I mean, it's a okay surrogate, but I don't think it's as good as actually knowing.
I think we have the feedback. We'll act on that. Thank you.
And I would add to, I agree that we should have caution in interpreting it. So if we get a non-response rate that makes the metric less reliable, then we would use caution in how we interpret the crosstabs. But right. I think we can learn something from if low-income customers are receiving different messages or have widely different impressions mm-hmm. compared to different income groups, then I think we should take note about what we learn, and I don't recall if we've had a lot of attention to that in the past, but
I would say it's probably not been in previous surveys, because EMC, this company, has done pretty much every one since 2004, so we will definitely act on that. So again, two weeks to give you more time to ponder. Again, keep in mind the trending questions that we're trying to retain, and a little bit, if we're going to add one, we're going to have to look at. We're really pushing our limit here with an 18-minute survey.
I have a kind of a logistical question about how, this is really for EMC, about how question 63 on race works. When you prompt them for one answer and multiracial is one of the answers, how often does that get confusion among the recipient? Do they want to tell you multiple answers, or do they accept providing only one? How effective is this? Is one answer to the question right now?
This has been an effective way to ask this question. We ask this question in almost all of our public opinion research, and so we've been able to get good data using this the way that it's phrased here. Certainly, some people might offer additional information. If a respondent offers more than one race, they would be marked as multiracial on that question.
About how, in our communities, about how large is the multiracial identification?
I'm going to call on Andy because she has past data in front of her.
Okay, that explains it. Thanks.
But growing.
I have a couple questions. One, if I wanted to know, there's a couple questions here about whether people think they're fair rates or not, but I'm looking for information that tells me what percentage of people feel like they're struggling with being able to pay their fair rates. I mean, you could be wealthy and still think that, you know, our rates are too high or something. That doesn't tell me whether the percentage of people or the demographics of the people who are struggling. Is that in the survey at all, or something that I can gain from that?
Sure. There are a number of questions that deal with rates, so sort of opinions around the fairness or the thoughtfulness of the rates that East Bay MUD sets. And so that is sort of a topic that we've covered in through several questions in the survey. And certainly if we add a question on their household income, we can look at the results on those questions based on their income.
But it doesn't really tell, neither of those will still tell me their attitude or whether they're struggling, whether they feel like they're struggling because the rates are so high. That would
sure, and I think I actually think what you mentioned about you know, they could be in the higher income level and say that they're struggling, and they could be in a lower income level and say that they're not struggling. So that kind of question can be difficult to interpret. However, if we look at you know, the question, which I will point out, which is, for example, question 15, which is, how would you rate the job that East Bay MUD is doing on setting reasonable water rates, fees, and charges? So if they feel like they struggle a lot, they're going to probably say only fair or poor there. There's another question. question 28 has fair and reasonable water rates. So if they, you know, somewhat or strongly disagree with that question, we certainly could interpret that as a comment related to what you're asking about.
But 28 is a new question, and that's not part of the trend cluster that we're trying to retain. So we could that's one where we have some latitude to rephrase the question, I would say, because I think that the point's been made that somebody could still not like our rates and have a lot of zeros after their income.
Or they can think they're fair, but it's still,
I can't pay it. We'll work on this.
It's a fair rate.
And I wouldn't say, I don't want to convey that personally, I don't think all of these T questions are inviolate. I'm not of the mind that we have to retain absolutely every single one of them. But 28 is not a T trending question. Yeah, it's new. And we can modify it.
Maybe some option. I think that's a good one to potentially ask about, affordability, or, you know, struggle to pay or struggle to afford, or because that's different than fair and fair and reasonable is a standard about, is East Bay MUD doing a good job of distributing the cost of providing water, you know, to its customers, not, you know, how hard is it to write the check?
I think the point's very clear, and I think we can act on this at times, especially in that question, at least in that question. Director Lenny.
The other piece, I'd be interested to know, and just so you know, I mean, I've done a fair number of surveys, and I always try to start with, what are the results that I'm trying to get, and what would I do? How are those results actionable? How would they? How well would they tell me to change something that we're doing, or keep doing what we're doing because it gives us positive things? And so my questions come from that direction. And again, perhaps from the workshop this morning, that's the important one. The questions 35 through 44, I'd be interested. What's the purpose here? What are we trying to learn here from these series of questions?
Okay, so these are the messaging questions, and I think that I'll start and then invite you to finish. But I think when you take the time, we try to make these not too wordy, but when you take the time to convey some information to the respondent and get their answer, it's different if you just ask them off the cuff. So talking about, say, drought preparation. You know, East Bay Mud is prepared for dry years by investing in new water sources, facilities, and technologies. And by the way, we really survived the last drought very well. They might not have that in mind if they were asked the question point blank. What do you think about East Bay Mud's drought preparedness? But if you would like to elaborate, all right.
Something else I will point out, since we were talking about question 28. What our intention was with the structure of this questionnaire was to ask about perception, you know, to what extent do they associate East Bay Mud with having fair and reasonable water rates, sort of at the beginning of the survey without having heard much more information through the course of the survey. Then they'll learn a little bit more in terms of the priorities and projects undertaken by East Bay Mud, and then with questions 35 through 44, they'll hear a little bit more in-depth information, things they might learn if they were to explore the website or to read a news article or to learn information from other sources. And we can understand the impact that additional information has on their perception of East Bay Mud. So we ask questions sort of before that set of questions and then after, in order to see if it changes their opinion about East Bay Mud.
Anything else, Doug?
No, I'll talk to you, Doug, about some of this. The last part, I'm still just kind of struggling overall with what we're trying to get out of this. These are, you know, kind of marketing statements, right? You know, we're doing a good job with this, we're doing a good job with that, and we're asking people, does this influence you the one way or another? Presumably, to be able to tell us what we could tell our customers or our customer base what we're doing well so that they'd like us. And that doesn't seem quite as interesting to other things about how they feel we're
it's
doing
true. I would say it's
or
true
that holes in their knowledge. Mm-hmm. That we might want to try and find out, you know, if they have no idea really what kind of rate structure we have or, you know, what we do for drought or that sort of thing would be interesting to me.
So are you saying you would like questions of a more neutral tone that are not, these are admittedly somewhat marketing. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, this is the part of the branding that we do. Not disguising that.
Right.
So you're asking, you would ask for a different kind of slant where we are a bit more neutral, as if it was a third party providing these informational messages? Or?
Possibly. I mean, I will say I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about this some, but again, I always start with what is it that I want to try and get out of a survey and what's actionable about
right.
that?
Right. Well, unlike you, this is my first survey, but I had precisely the same interest. And how is this? How can we use this information? Part of what I'm interested in is how effective is the information we're transmitting by over the web or with social media or through the bill insert? How many people actually read that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear about us on the radio? Do you see the billboards? Do you see the bus station ads? This also helps us in focusing our investment in messaging. So that's my.
But we're not testing that, right?
I think we haven't asked. We had.
We asked them.
How have you? There are questions, I think, about how have you acquired information from East Bay Mud? But Jessica, help me out here. I think I'm not sure that we.
Maybe I didn't get to that part. You get a bill. Okay. Do you read the customer pipeline? Well, I'll spend some more time with this and take a look. Is that kind of question? Right. I think would be very important.
Right.
Questions.
And do we capture location information?
I believe it's supposed to be. It's not. They're trying to randomize to get a geographical distribution as well.
But then, are the crosstab? Do the crosstabs get split up by?
They will. Yes, that information is available through.
Okay.
But you don't have the question about water buffaloes on here.
Okay, that, we can add that.
You specifically?
Doug, I think that the 35 through 44, by you can cross-tab the scale of favorable to no difference with the outcome questions of agency I can trust and fair and reasonable water rates. It's a fair question to ask, so what? You know? So I think that what we could learn is, if we're doing marketing and customer education, which of those messages between 35 and 44 are the ones to emphasize. So I think that if we just are trying to be judicious about which messages we roll out to customers, that could help us choose and prioritize amongst those messages. It does look like we would want to be very confident in those messages being the key messages for that category. It doesn't look like we're set up to do like an A/B test about how to talk about earthquake readiness or maintenance. Particularly some of these topics, I think I could imagine two or three variations of not necessarily A/B testing, but just different angles of all of our capital programs and infrastructure. But those are just my general comments, and I'll leave it to the staff to consider whether we are comfortable with 35 to 44 or if we want to expand.
So two questions back to you. Are you suggesting we could do with a smaller number of these questions, 35, not to have so many issues we touch on?
I would not recommend cutting it. I think that unless we think that something is so general that it's not going to really matter to a customer to hear, if we think that based on past surveys that the customers just really never really said, they were always in the 3 or 4 or 6 range, then that's the somewhat less, much less, or no opinion. So if we never really got a lot of a spread and reaction to it, then maybe we drop it. But I think it's a good list. I think my point was more that some of these are actually expandable, and there's really elements and dimensions to the topic that go beyond the message that we're putting out in front. But it looked on first glance, it looks about right to me. It looks like those are really the messages that we've been talking about for a long time, and so I'm familiar with those messages and. And I know it takes a lot of work to focus.
And just so I understand, when you say A/B replies, it means thumbs up, thumbs down?
Sorry. Oh no! And by A/B, I mean like let's say we had an alternative way of talking about maintenance. If we're trying to decide, and I don't know what that other side is, but let's say that we think that. There's just a different way to say it, and we're not sure internally if we want to reverse the sentence, if we want to change the wording a little bit. It's really just a consideration. I don't have a specific recommendation.
Thank you. President Young, any other?
Anything else? There's nothing about wastewater.
I was thinking about whether we want to test message recall on. We've done a lot of promotion of Clean Bay, like urging customers not to put fat, soil, and grease in the bay, or urging customers to not dispose pharmaceuticals, to bring them to a take back center. We're in a non-drought year, and I think we've in drought years we've put so much effort into the survey on drought response. So we have a great opportunity to try to introduce a temporary question to test message recall for one or more bay protection initiatives.
And just to say that, okay, and if you'll see question 19, let me address one question first. Wastewater was something we grappled with. It is only less than half of the 1.4 million residents. So I think that was just a decision not to include that, because then we're having to do yet another parsing of those who are in and out of the wastewater service area. And then you'll see question 19, though, was meant to broadly address stewardship, particularly of aquatic ecosystems. So it kind of gets there on the healthy bay. In an indirect way.
So, yeah, my question was more about it's not really a direct versus indirect. I think it's more of a customer engagement question. So do they recall or adopt practices that we're urging them to do? So I don't know what the best way to ask that question is. We could ask them to self-identify if they do what we are telling them and asking them to do to protect the bay, and choose one or more of those behaviors. We could just ask if they recall seeing a message from us. So I don't know which of those is more effective to get to the answer that we want to work with.
I appreciate that, and that certainly gives us, again, that feedback. We're looking on the effectiveness of messaging, if we can find a way to fit that in. So well, we're going to work with. You've given us a fair amount to work with, so we'll take it away.
To get 1,200 people to respond for an 18-minute survey, how many people are you going to have to go through to get the 1,200? And does that, by chance, and I don't know if there's analysis ever done to show that it may skew the answers based on who ultimately says, yeah, I'll sit down for an 18-minute survey and do this versus a 5-minute survey? And does that skew one way or the other the responses?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We do have to, I will say, go through a number of attempts in order to reach someone who is willing to respond or is reachable. That is one of the reasons why we're moving beyond just telephone survey methodology. It's becoming harder and harder to get a sample of people to respond who are representative of the community that we're trying to reach, the population we're trying to reach, over the phone only. With the introduction of the email-to-web methodology, response rates overall are a little better. And what one of the things that we strive to do and have paid very close attention to is representativeness and quality control. So our surveys, we do a lot of different kinds of polling. We do everything from public policy to political. We've certainly seen that, for example, outcomes of elections are very close to what we've measured in a survey. So we're very confident in this mixed mode methodology and its ability to accurately represent the opinions of the population.
Okay. One more thought. One last thought. And I recall in a survey a long time ago, maybe it wasn't that long ago, we had some kind of open-ended opportunity. I don't see that here. Have we just found it to be so much trouble, too difficult to organize, we just get a bunch of junk? Or it feels to me like it's a great opportunity just to take input, take feedback, and we could learn something that we haven't scoped out. Right. So that's one object to it. Another option for using an open-ended response is to learn something more in depth about the term fair and reasonable rates. So we're kind of throwing out this term fair and reasonable rates, and I can imagine, based on the diversity of our service area, a lot of different private interpretations of that term and responses to different kinds of responses based on different things. Some people might say, not fair and reasonable because I don't understand why it's so high. Some people might say, it's not fair and reasonable because it doesn't reward me enough for conservation. It's not particularly important to me, but I do want to suggest providing an open-ended response for general feedback about something we haven't thought about. And then if we take a hard look at the fair and reasonable questions and think, is this data going to be useful? Maybe we want to provide some kind of opportunity for explanation to make the fair and reasonable questions useful.
Okay, so I heard a number of different questions. I did want to address open-ended questions in general, as you suspect, are a little bit difficult, especially to do over the phone. They take quite a bit of time. However, sometimes their value outweighs that, and we do include them. We have one open-ended question in this survey. It's question 10. So among those who say they've heard or seen something recently, we ask, you know, what have you seen or heard? It's very much at the beginning of the survey, so we really want to see what are the kinds of things people have heard about East Bay Mud lately. And that's something that we have looked into in the past. So in terms of adding additional options for open-ended questions, I do think they can be very interesting and useful. It is about making those judicious choices that you talked about earlier. And the in further investigation into fair and reasonable rates, that could be an entire topic for a focus group, for example, in and of itself. We could certainly talk to a group of people for a long time about what makes fair and reasonable rates. I think because that is such a concern right now, that's sort of why we're very interested in seeing if there is any kind of difference in their perception of fair and reasonable rates kind of before we introduce information about the things that East Bay Mud is doing compared to after we provide some information about what you're doing, just to see if people's judgments of East Bay Mud and the rates and fees will change once they learn a little bit more about what's going on here.
I appreciate the dialogue, and I think that explains why the proposal is structured the way it is.
Excuse me. I think you answered it. What I took you to say just a moment ago is, while fair and reasonable will be in the mind of the beholder, what we're looking for is what is a general feel, as opposed to defining what fair is or defining what reasonable is. And then the second thing is, I'm hoping that you can answer, how many calls do you have to make to get to 1,200 answers?
It really depends. And since we're doing this both online by email invitation and by making phone calls, I think response rates tend to be somewhere in the range of 4% to 7%. So that's pretty small. That's very typical industry-wide. And as I say, we've been getting very, I'll call them accurate results as far as we can assess, even with response rates that are low. There is actually a lot of literature out there studying this because it is harder and harder to reach people nowadays. So comparing the impact of lower response rates to accuracy of research, accuracy has not declined in the way you might suspect it would, given the decline in response rates.
Thank you.
Do think that, I mean, I recognize only 600,000 of our customers are wastewater customers. On the other hand, how often do we do a wastewater master plan process?
That's a very good point. And
I mean,
it was
once every 10 years. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just think we're missing an important opportunity to understand, how people view our priorities in the wastewater side. And maybe there's another app. Maybe there's another other way of sort of understanding some more about that. But
so the timing that Doug and I had talked about was that we would potentially consider having more of a wastewater focus in the next survey, given that it lines up. We'll be doing our wastewater master plan, and we have the results towards the end of next year, and then we would potentially conduct a survey. So you raise a good point that we didn't we're not having the results from the survey isn't going to change how we gather data on the master plan.
Right.
It'd be more about, well, how do we message now that we know what we need to do with our master plan? How can we help people appreciate it? So good point. Thank you.
Anybody else? Get your other comments in to Doug by when?
2 weeks from today, please, February 5th.
The 5th? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I got to find my agenda here again. Hang on.
So I would just share under GM reports, also at your places, is the updated Speakers Bureau, providing information on recent and upcoming outreach efforts.
Committee reports from Ledge HR, East Bay Regional Park District Liaison Committee, and planning are in your packets. Any items for future consideration? people ready for, submit them to me if you have them. Director comments?
Good.
Yep. Got anything to throw in? Okay, please submit your written director comments to Risha Cole. I just, both Frank and John have encountered this already. I am asking that if you are attending a meeting or a conference on the agency's behalf, that the rest of us are not able to attend, that you include in your director, your next director comments, a short, you know, couple paragraphs report, attach any items that you think are worth sharing or take-home messages that you think we should all be thinking about or might want to put into items for future consideration, so that these things that we're spending, you know, sometimes several grand on are, you know, paying back.
Actually, I had one thing. Aqua Region 5 will be, I've chatted with Alex, we're looking for them to meet here at East Bay Mud offices on September 5th. The agenda is still a little tentative, but one of the things will be amongst the Region 5 attendees, a water report, how each of them are doing. So I want, you know, might save the date because it'll be open to any member of Region 5.
What date is it?
September 5th. It's a long ways off, but I, you know, just wanted to get, I sorry, I meant to bring that up earlier.
All right.
We used to provide them with a tour. Are we doing that this year?
No, this is a one day. Instead of 2 days, it's one day, so it's going to be a tight meeting. People will be coming in from different areas and then leaving, and that doesn't lend itself at this point to a tour of some kind.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
We don't need a motion.
Oh, we don't need a motion.
Just use that gavel.
We're adjourned. Oh, do I have to say our next meeting will be on February 5th?
No.
Nope, February 13th, 2019. A different day than usual due to the President's Day holiday.